KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 38th Annual Portland International Film Festival, which begins February 5th with a screening of Wild Tales at the Fox Tower and continuing through February 21st at many locations all over Portland. This year's festival brings over 150 films from around the globe to the Portland metro area. Again, that's the 38th Annual Portland International Film Festival, running through February 21st. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Art Focus, a weekly KBOO program featuring local artists, writers, and performers. I'm your host this week, Ken Jones, filling in for Joseph Gallivan, who's probably out gallivanting about. On today's show, our in-studio guest is Sean Kowalty. Sean's directing Zen Shorts, the latest production from Portland's Tears of Joy Theater. Tears of Joy is recognized as one of the nation's outstanding puppet theaters, known internationally for its innovation and excellence. Each year, their programs play to over 100,000 children and adults. We also have as guests today cast members, actors and puppeteers, Andrew Friday and McKenna Tweet. Sean, Andrew, McKenna, welcome to KBOO.
Hello, thank you for
Great
having us.
Great to be here.
We also are going to try a song today from the show, too, so we'll see how that works out. We have a very crowded studio here. First, I'd like to get to the production, and you guys didn't have to come far. It's at the Imago Theater, which is right across the street from KBOO. So just to let you know about that, the production is based on an award-winning picture book, Zen Shorts, by the author John J. Muth. Sean has a copy right here. That was selected as a Caldecott Honor Book in 2006, is one of the highest awards, certainly, in children's literature and picture books. Sean, what's basically the book about?
The book is a wonderful book about three children, three siblings, and a moment where their lives are changed when a panda visits them. And the panda helps them to gain a perspective and an understanding about the world that they didn't have before this visitation through sharing three different Zen cones, which are all beautifully illustrated in the book and are all represented in our adaptation of the book as well.
And I was talking to Travis yesterday, who came over from the production from Tears of Joy, and he had mentioned that each of the three stories have some kind of moral for children. But as I was reading more about the book, I saw an author's note for it. So John J. Muth actually wrote, "Zen Shorts," and this is a quote, "Zen Shorts are short meditations, ideas to puzzle over, tools which hone our ability to act with intuition. They have no goal, but they often challenge us to re-examine our habits, desires, concepts, and fears." So, Sean, I was going to ask, how does this differ from, say, your typical children's story like Aesop's Fable, where there's a very clear-cut moral?
Yeah, it's very different. It's really a beautiful book in the sense that these stories are asking the reader and the interpreter of the book to sit with these stories for a while and to let them stew so that you can really take from it your own specific meaning. I will say that lack of a real clear-cut black and white meaning or answer in the stories is what makes the piece both a challenging piece to adapt into a piece of theater, which is all about having theatrical concrete moments and but also really, really beautiful as a piece of theater, because just like the book, in our adaptation, there is this meditative quality and a stillness, and it's been a total pleasure to work on. Yeah.
I also read that as you mentioned, there's three stories in there. Mm-hmm. Two of the stories come from Zen Buddhist literature. And again, a little research on Google, very, very easy. Mm-hmm. That goes back hundreds of years. The third story, according to the author, comes from Taoism, Chinese religion. And that goes back a BC era, you know, several thousand years ago. Mm. And you had mentioned some of the challenges in adapting it because of the not having a clear moral there.
Yeah.
But also, is there any challenge in adapting stories that go back that far? They must still have a ring to a contemporary audience, I would guess.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think that they're actually more universal and more easily connected to our spirits than something like a Grimm's Tale or an Aesop Tale, because they're so primal and they're so really at the heart of what it means to be satisfied and to have peace in your life. So they definitely are still relevant. And part of the hard thing has been actually trying to make sure that we're being respectful of these stories. And in that research, in that work, realizing that, gosh, you know, it's not just one origin for these tales, that if you start looking deeper, these stories were oral traditions way before they were written down. And so these oral traditions traveled and became the stories of many different cultures, and you can find slightly different versions that span the globe. And it's a treat to work on something that's so rooted in our history, in our cultural history.
It sounds like rather than just adapting the book, you know, straight from the book, you actually did some research on the stories and went back to variations on them in adapting this. And
very much the book is a children's picture book, and it's lovely, but it's quick. It's a short book. So when you take a picture book to and you go through that journey of adapting it, you really have to balance honoring the book and acknowledging that folks that come to see this play are going to have some potential relationship to the source material, but also realizing that you have to make strong choices and you have to take liberties, because at the end of the day, you have to make a great piece of theater. And so that's been the biggest challenge, is finding where we land in that middle zone between those two needs. And we were quite nervous adapting the piece, and we had a couple of moments where we were presenting versions of this show and were very mindful of trying not to give too much in terms of an answer to the audience. And I think that we've arrived in a really strong place where we aren't providing those answers, but we're being clever, and we're providing enough resolution by our characters that are the central characters, Michael, Addie, are the two siblings in our adaptation. And through the hour-long performance, Michael and Addie are finding resolution. And it's allowing our audience, I hope, to then come to their own conclusion and find their version of that resolution, and to take the meaning that they want to take from the stories and apply it to their lives.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because at your primary audience here are children. And I read from your website, first grade to sixth grade, or do you have like a particular demographic in mind in terms of age or grade level?
For this particular piece?
Yes.
I think Zen Shorts is most successful in a third through sixth or seventh grade audience. The two main characters in the piece, Michael and Addie, one is 6 and one is 10. And that's really that age range the piece is intended for. It's certainly enjoyable for folks that are younger than that, for younger age children.
And older.
And older, yeah. And I think the piece is very successful as well in being a piece that operates on multiple levels. So there's one show that we're presenting for children, but there's a totally different level of humor and of commentary about the children and about the stories that I think really only adults are picking up on.
The interesting thing here for me is that when you were very careful not to make it too clear, it seems like a lot of entertainment for that age group goes overboard in kind of making it way too clear. It
yeah.
seems you have a lot of respect for that yeah. that audience, that the children's audience there.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
A lot of producers, directors, writers don't.
Yeah, there's a lot of theater for younger audiences that is... primarily operating in this zone of talking down to children and trying to moralize everything. And so we're really trying to do our best to present to children that are going through a lot of changes in their lives, and they're real kids, and they've got real issues, and they're not always nice, and they're certainly not always nice to each other. And there's a rawness and an immediacy to the way that they're that McKenna, who is with us, she plays Addie, and she's really come up with a fiery little 6-year-old character to you know, just really make it feel real. Yeah.
McKenna, could you just give us, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but can you give us a little bit of Addie's voice there, what you came up with?
Sure. This is Addie's voice. She actually is inspired by a 6-year-old that I do know in my life, my niece, So Holly. So if she happens to hear this right now, she might be really excited.
Holly sounds a little like that?
Yes, her name is So Holly, and she sounds a little bit like this, yeah.
And Andrew, you're doing Stillwater, the panda.
Yes.
I had apparently one challenge for you here. This is from the description of the book, and I guess this came directly from the author, John J. Muth. He said, "The giant panda carries a red umbrella and speaks," and I quote, "a slight panda accent," which I have no idea what that is. What did you come up with for that?
Well, you know, there's sort of a great challenge with that, which is that pandas, so Stillwater is often... Though not always, Stillwater is often, though not always, a very centered, balanced person. So I want to give him the weight. But at the same time, I was very interested in learning more about what pandas sound like. And they squeak is the only way to describe it. They have these very high kind of noises. And so, but the best part is when they're anxious, they'll make growly kind of noises. And there are a lot of moments where Stillwater's sort of... surprising for a Zen panda that he's a little off balance. He's frustrated at the way the children are behaving or something like that. So while he speaks with quite a bit of gravity, sometimes he gets excited.
That's great. So you did a lot of research into the way pandas actually sound. I don't think I remember ever hearing a panda sound.
Yeah,
I mean,
not.
Just see him kind of laying there and eating, right? Eating leaves.
Yeah. And... No, very true. There are some great soundboards online. That's all I can say.
Oh, panda sound effects. Yeah. And I want to go back to, again, not giving a clear-cut moral, because I looked at the book's reader's comments on Amazon, and there was one particularly very interesting. One reader wrote, and this is a parent, "I read this to my children last evening." This is about the book, so not the play.
But, yeah.
"It resulted in a lengthy discussion about anger, giving, forgiving, wealth, and life. A wonderful book with a structure that is conducive to discussion." It seems like you did the exact same thing then in adapting it for the stage. Again, not clear cut. In that respect, have you had any audience discussions after a performance? Is that something you plan?
I'm not sure. I believe that we will have some availability to answer questions after the piece. We have in the past done that. And actually, there's one memory, I've shared this with the cast, I believe, but we were presenting a much earlier version of this piece, and a man came into the audience with a very bicked, shaved head, and I could tell by his posture that he was a gentleman that knew much about meditation. He just was very centered, and he was observant, and he didn't laugh much, he just taking it in. And afterwards, he came up to me, and he said, do you work at the theater? And I never admit I'm the director, so I said... Oh, yes, I do. I help out, you know. Can I pass anything along to the staff? And he said, "I think that this piece did exactly what I was hoping it would do and nothing that I was hoping it wouldn't, which is to exist in this respectful zone, but not..." He said, you either have to do nothing on stage to achieve a piece that has a meditative core, or you have to... allow your characters to have chaos and moments of nothingness, because that then shows the audience what that centered feeling and what that meditative zone can achieve. And so he was very, very happy. And I always feel that after that point moving forward, the piece has moved with a little confidence.
Did you ever find out who that gentleman was, or was he a Zen Buddhist monk? Or
he practiced Buddhism, and he is an instructor, a meditation instructor in Los Angeles.
And that, of course, Andrew's character is Stillwater, the panda. And I know the author made a point of the name of the panda, Stillwater. But the way you play him, Andrew, you've got the Stillwater and then the periods of chaos, apparently, or frustration.
We've found ourselves making the analogy... We found ourselves making the analogy to Mary Poppins at times, in that she knows where she's going in her story, but she allows herself to get caught up in the frustration of the children in order to teach them something, in order to inspire cognitive dissonance in them. And that's exactly what Stillwater does with his kids. Also saying, have you gotten audience feedback? I'm not sure if this has been made clear, but Rogue Artist Ensemble in LA has been working on this story for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, there has been a lot of development with audience feedback.
And that was actually the next area of questioning I was going to get into was the collaboration.
Before I
just give a little idea of what people are listening to, and hopefully that they'll keep listening, I'd like if you could just let them know the dates of the show. And as I mentioned, it's across the street here, so it's the corner of Southeast 8th and Burnside in Portland at Imago Theater.
Mm-hmm. And the piece Zen Shorts is playing for the next 2 weeks. We open this Friday. We have Friday evening performance. It's our gala, and we're going to have a little party before and after, I believe. And then we have performances the next two weekends, Saturdays and Sundays, in the morning and afternoons.
And we have a special treat for listeners, too. We'll take the first caller right now at 503-231-8187, and you'll win a pair of tickets for any performance. What you do, once we get your name and everything, and the phone call goes through and you're the winner, you'll call up number 503-248-0557, and we can get that to you later, too. And that will give you a schedule of the performances. Just pick the one you want, and your name will be on the guest list for two tickets. I also want to let you know that you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio in Portland. Our in-studio guests today are Sean Kowalty, director of Zen Shorts, and two of the puppeteers and actors from it, Andrew Friday and McKenna Tweet. Thanks very much for joining us today. Andrew, you were mentioning the collaboration between Tears of Joy and the theater company where this production originated, Rogue Artists Ensemble in Los Angeles. Sean, what's the relationship between the two groups? You're not Tears of Joy, you're the Rogue Artists. How did what is the relationship, and how did it come about?
Many years ago, Tears of Joy's prior managing director, which was at one point before Rogue Artists Ensemble's managing director, hatched this idea. Tears of Joy's mission is to tell stories that have a specific cultural origin. So they really have a world storytelling focus. And Neil was his name. He felt that Zen Shorts was a perfect piece for Tears of Joy. And so together, Nancy Aldrich, who's the artistic director for Tears of Joy, and myself and Neil worked together to come up with this plan. We applied for funding through the National Endowment for the Arts and received a grant to be able to do this collaboration, which involves Rogue Artists Ensemble bringing all of the Zen Shorts production elements along with myself and then one cast member from Los Angeles, Miles Tabor, as well as our video designer who had since moved to Las Vegas. So all of us arrived in Portland. We've been here. This is the beginning of our third week in Portland, and we've been here collaborating with the Tears of Joy company, and the four other cast members for the piece are all from Tears of Joy and are Portland artists and residents. So it's been a fantastic adventure bringing this show, working at Tears of Joy, and also, frankly, just being able to allow the piece to benefit from artists that are puppeteers, that at their hearts are also really accomplished puppeteers and manipulators, and don't have any of the baggage from the development process. Rogue.
What kind of baggage would that be?
You know, it's hard making a play. Art is really hard. It's incredibly inefficient and costly and frustrating. And so you basically have at every step of the way, there are 1,000 things that can go wrong. So to get a piece that is successful and that works, it's a sheer act of will. and not willing, not giving up. So the first few versions of Zen Shorts were challenging. They were not, there's nary a word that is the same now in the script from 3 years ago.
Oh, and that was the Rogue Artists Ensemble in Los Angeles, the
yes.
premiere.
And so this piece originally formed as a commission from a very large, several thousand seat performing arts center in Southern California, the Segerstrom Performing Arts Center. They commissioned Rogue Artists Ensemble to create this piece, and we developed it under their roof. And it was very successful, one of the more successful pieces they had, but we knew it could be better. And so from there, it's taken this very circuitous journey. Originally, when the piece premiered, it was a combination of two stories from the book Zen Shorts and the main story from the book Zen Ghosts. But even though those were our favorite stories from the series of books by Muth, we couldn't smash them together to make something that felt as fulfilling as what the three stories in the piece feel now. So in the last year, we took out the ghost story, and then created and built production elements to add in the third story that we originally passed on in Zen Shorts.
That third story from Zen Shorts, then does mm-hmm. that get its Portland premiere?
Not only is that story getting its Portland premiere, but there is not an element in the production that hasn't been rebuilt or retouched in some way. So really every part of this production is new. It's over 20 puppets are brand new for this Portland premiere. So it was fantastic to be able to drive the show and up the coast, but then to also be able to give these objects to our new Portland friends to handle and bring to life for the first time.
I should ask our new Portland friends, Andrew McKenna here. McKenna, what was that like to come in on this production where it already had quite a few performances in Los Angeles? And I know it's very complicated. We'll get a little bit into that too, the puppetry, the video technology. There's quite a bit going on in the show.
Yes.
What was it like to kind of come on and then adapted for the Portland audience?
You know, it's really thrilling to step into a piece that already has very, very solid roots. Rogue Artist Ensemble, as we've said in the program, has spent years developing this piece, and I'm just cast in this part, and I get to step on in and work with some great people that I've never worked with before, which is always very, very exciting as an artist. You want to work with a wide array of people. Mm. So stepping in to this part that has a lot of concrete roots, but is still very open for my interpretation. A lot of what Addie has now and what she will have for these performances comes from me and comes from my collaboration with Sean and Andrew and our other cast members, Joel, Miles, and Amy. Mm. And so in that sense, it's truly magical, really, to be put in that process. And it is very exciting to play a six-year-old.
And Andrew, who plays the panda Stillwater, had you seen the Los Angeles production before working on this Portland?
No. I was very excited to be asked to be a part of the project, and I kind of fell into it, as it were. And meeting all the people, it really is delightful to have so much of this work already done. The inefficiency for puppet shows, especially, is for all performing arts. Puppet shows are infamously inefficient because you'll make a prop that's for one scene. You spend 20 hours building it, and it's on for maybe 10 seconds. And that happens a lot because you want to keep it visually stimulating. You want to have a great variety of textures and actions. But in order to do that, you can't just act it out. You have to have these well-built things. And so we've got these wonderful objects that we all get to play with without having to see it built from the ground up. It's really great.
Before we get, we have Andrew and McKenna. They very graciously agreed to perform a song, which might be a little difficult because I'm not sure we'll have the, we could just play the musical background here off of Sean's MacBook. We'll do that song. I do have one more pair of tickets to give away, and this is... Oh, we have one more pair. Oh, okay. Oh, Kate said she gave away both. So.
Well, enjoy.
Yes.
So thanks very much for calling there. I'm sorry we didn't have more, but there's performances starting Friday at Imago Theater. Let's get into the song then. Shawnee, you all set up with the music?
I think so. I'm gonna give it a go and play it back and...
Okay, live on KABU.
See what happens.
Andrew and McKenna as Addy and Stillwater the Panda.
Look at the moon and see its beauty, how a simple sight can spread throughout the earth. Sometimes you see a robe that's old and tattered, but to others it's a treasure of great worth. Give the gift of giving, it's the simple things in life that help us see. When we feel the needs of others, we'll discover the great gift of empathy.
So gifts of giving, not receiving, make me richer. What I carry in my heart is all I need. People are no different from pandas. Even brothers can be changed by a good deed.
Give the gift of giving. It's the simple things in life that help us see. When we feel the need of others, we'll discover the great gift of empathy. We'll discover the great gift of empathy.
Oh, thanks very much. I want to hear more. Were those original songs written for this production?
Yeah, the piece started out with the belief that we were not doing a musical. And then over the 3 years, it has become a musical. So there are 7 original songs in the piece. And they have this very folky, modern vibe with just a little hint of sort of Chinese instrumentation in there.
Yeah, the background music sounded that. It had an Asian feel,
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, there's a few. We in each song, we've tried to be reminiscent of melody lines that you would find in cultures that have an Asian origin. Yeah.
Well, we just have a few minutes left in the program. I wanted to let the listeners know that this is the largest technical extravaganza in the history of Tears of Joy. And Sean, could you tell us a little bit about there's actually several types of puppetry and then some of the technology that's involved in addition to the wonderful music, which we just heard a sample of.
Yes, we have almost 50 puppets in the show, and they range styles from bunraku puppetry, which it's a tradition inspired by a Japanese puppet tradition. We also have hand puppets, rod puppets, shadow puppets. We have a few puppets that are also a little bit unique to the piece, these flat kind of 2D carved puppets, tons of different styles. In addition to that, there's video projections and hundreds and hundreds of audio cues to help give us a sense of place and just to bring these stories to life.
I wish we had more time, but before we wrap up, Sean, can you just give us again the performances and again where people can get tickets and see the show?
You can get tickets on the web. Just Google Tears of Joy or Rogue Artists, and both websites will take you to the ticketing link. The performances begin this Friday at Imago Theater, and it's Rogue Artists Ensemble and Tears of Joy's production of Zen Shorts, playing for 2 weekends.
Thanks very much for coming to KABU today. We've been talking with Sean Kowalty, director of Zen Shorts, and two of the actors and puppeteers, Andrew Friday and McKenna Tweet. Zen Shorts is the latest production from Portland's Tears of Joy Theater. Opening night, as Sean mentioned, is this Friday, February 6th, at the Imago Theater Building, which is just across the street from us at KABU, corner of Southeast 8th and Burnside. I'm Ken Jones. This has been Art Focus on KABU Community Radio. Many thanks to Sean, Andrew, and McKenna for joining us today, to all of you for listening. Stay tuned now for Noon Headlines and then Buscando America. You're listening to KBOO in Portland.
Muy buenas tardes. Esto es Tania Gómez Daza para PM News. A continuación, un corte informativo en español para el día 3 de febrero de 2015. Termina hoy en Ginebra la reunión entre el Comité de Desapariciones Forzadas de la ONU y la delegación mexicana conformada por sociedad civil y el Estado mexicano. En esta reunión, celebrada lunes y martes, México expuso la situación del país en cuanto a las desapariciones de personas y la necesidad de que el Estado mexicano acepte la competencia de la ONU para recibir y examinar las peticiones individuales sobre desapariciones, ya que es una de las recomendaciones dirigidas a México en diversos documentos de organismos internacionales. Por su parte, el subsecretario para Asuntos Multilaterales y de Derechos Humanos, Juan Manuel Gómez Robledo, anunció en Ginebra que espera que para junio México cuente con una ley general de desaparición forzada. El presidente Obama dio a conocer su propuesta de presupuesto para el año 2016, en donde pide al Congreso aumentar los impuestos para los ricos y las corporaciones con el fin de ayudar a financiar la educación y fijar la infraestructura deteriorada. El plan de 4 trillones incluye recortes